So we're going to begin. I've got a one-point question, a two-point question, and a three-point question. And just to know, not that, you know, services would be competitive with each other. 8 o'clock, they didn't even get to the three-point question because they didn't answer the two-point question. But 9:15 got all the way through. So no pressure. Right. I am not a role model. Who said it for 1 point? Charles Barkley, 1 point it is. All right, team gets to continue. All right. What was the context in which Charles Barkley said, I am not a role model? Oh, you're close. Yeah, that was going to be the third question was the timing. But where'd that line come from? Don't tell each other, just shout it out. Oh, who said that? Bingo. All right. Once a news reporter, always a news reporter. Yeah, so it was in a Nike ad, and Ken's close. I mean, I let him go for the decade, you know, the next. He said 1992. It was actually 1993 in a Nike ad. Sir Charles said, I am not a role model. And then he went on. See, everyone remembers that part, but they don't remember what he said afterward. He said, parents should be role models. Just because I dunk a basketball doesn't mean that I should raise your kids. And I don't know if Charles or, you know, the people who produced that ad were intentional about the irony, but we can certainly see it because when he said that, he became the very thing that he said he wasn't. And he wasn't a role model because he was a basketball player or an athlete of any kind. He was a role model because he understood how it is that growth and formation are meant to take place. So today we're looking at the subject of mentoring. And we might say, if we were to continue in the spirit of that early Nike ad, we might say, just because I'm a role model doesn't mean that I'm a mentor. But I might be. So role models and mentors are not functional equivalents. There are some important differences. A role model can be one without knowing who sees him or her as a role model. I mean, you can do it from afar. It doesn't require any cooperation. Doesn't even necessitate being alive. And we might look at historical figures and say, you know, that person is a role model to me. It was just a few weeks ago we were running a series here on the life of Dietrich Bonhoeffer, you know, German pastor, and who was killed toward the end of the Second World War. Well, he's been dead for 70 years, but I assure you that there are Christ followers today who would see in Dietrich Bonhoeffer a role model. Mentors are different. Mentors are in real time and intentional and known in each other's, you know, the mentor and the mentee are known to each other. And there's some understanding there. And the mentoring relationship, we tend to think of that as being, well, they're just guiding and they're shaping and they're telling what to do. There is a pouring into in a mentoring relationship, but it's not only that. Even more than that, there's a drawing out from the mentee what's already there, helping them to see you have what it takes to accomplish whatever it is that's in front of you. Now, we might be a little restive about being a mentor. Let me just ask, first of all, how many of you have had someone in your life who you consider to be a mentor? Just show of hands. Okay. And how many of you have someone in your life, at least one person, who you still believe to be a mentor? Okay, a little fewer. So it is hard to get to mentoring another if you haven't seen it. But I'm hoping that some of the work that we do this morning will help you at least see it out there somewhere. So, you know, we might say, just because I'm a parent, or just because I'm a teacher, or just because I'm a coach, or just because I run a business, or just because I volunteer in this role, It doesn't mean that I can guide, shape, help mold another person. We're ambivalent maybe about mentoring. The Apostle Paul was not ambivalent about much. He was very confident in his role as both role model and mentor. So he would say things in his letters. He says this more than once. Be an imitator of me. Do it the way I do it. And if we just hear that outside of knowing what his life was all about, we would think, well, that's kind of arrogant. You know, who would put themselves forward and say, you know, do it this way, do it my way. But knowing his backstory, we see that it's exactly the opposite. It's actually an expression of humility. Because Paul was very honest about where he had been and what God had done in his life. Paul had been actively pursuing and persecuting followers of Jesus in the early days. And he had a face-to-face encounter with the risen Jesus. And rather than zap him, the risen Jesus called him into a ministry by which Paul communicated the reality of Jesus' life and its impact on him and on the world in such a way that the world was changed. Hard to imagine the world without the Apostle Paul. We're probably not here if it's not for the Apostle Paul. And so when he says, be an imitator of me, what he's saying is, if God can use me as much of a mess and counterforce as I was, he can certainly use you. So Paul was very clear about his place as a role model, but he also understood himself to be a mentor, directly involved in guiding and shaping others in his life, and in particular his younger colleague in ministry, Timothy. So I'd like for us to look at what it is that he says to Timothy that's so valuable as a mentor in the life of another. The first thing he says right away in verse 3, he says, I remember you constantly in my prayers night and day. Constantly, night and day. I mean, he's kind of got it all covered there. And the important thing there is Paul is bringing Timothy before God. And not that God would forget, but he invites us to bring people before him in prayer. And the other thing that happens there is Paul is once again humbling himself before God when it comes to his role in Timothy's life. Sometimes we think, as a mentor, it's our job to have all the answers. And Paul is saying, I'm bringing Timothy, I'm bringing you before God. And I'm open to being part of the answer to that prayer. I mean, that's what happens, right? When we bring things to God, we have to be open to the possibility that he might say, hey, I'm glad you thought of that. It's been on my mind for quite a while, and here's how I'd like to use you in responding to that very need. So Paul is placing himself in that place in Timothy's life. So prayer on behalf of anyone we're a mentor to is the starting point. Then he goes in verse 5. He notes that he is not the one and only mentor in Timothy's life. He's one in a line. And he names specifically Timothy's grandmother and mother as having shaped him before that. But now he's there, and chances are good. I mean, he's writing this from prison. Timothy very well may outlive him. There's going to be somebody after him who can serve as a mentor to Timothy as well. So that's an important part. You know, we might think, I can't take this on, or I'm not equipped to take this on across a long period of time. Sometimes it's just a moment. Sometimes it's just a season that we serve as a mentor in the life of another. And then he gets to a couple of really important points here. In verse 6, he says, for this reason I remind you to rekindle the gift of God that is within you. So he's using the image of fire there. Have you ever been camping and you've got this nice fire going at night and eventually you're getting tired and it's time to go to sleep, and so you're going to contain the fire, try to put it out, maybe bank it, but you don't want any live flame going through the night. And you wake up the next morning and you think, this fire is dead. And you go and maybe stir around a little bit and you see, oh, here's a spark. Oh, and here's an ember over here. And maybe you bring them together and bring some material to it. And before you know it, you've got a fire going again and you're ready to cook breakfast. Or run out and get Egg McMuffins and just enjoy the fire. But right. So Paul is using that image of rekindling to say, it may well be, Timothy, that what God has given you feels like it's gone out. But it's a rekindling process that I'm involved with here now with you. These are gifts that God has already given to you. And then really the heart of Paul's mentoring to Timothy is contained in verse 7. So if you're thinking, I don't really understand this mentoring stuff, go back and read verse 7 over and over and over again. And it captures the heart of it. He says, first of all, God did not give us a spirit of cowardice. Do you know how many times in the Bible God says, don't be afraid? I mean, over and over and over again. And think about in your own life, how many things that really would have mattered and been good things didn't get done because you were afraid. Not because you didn't have the ability, not because you didn't know what to do, but just flat out of fear. And here Paul is saying to Timothy, that is not of God. Fear is not of God. Right? What is letter 1 John? Perfect love casts out all fear. So Paul is saying once again to Timothy, I'm here to encourage you, to pour courage into you so that you can do what God has set before you. And then he goes on again. And there are three things that God has given you which are necessary and sufficient for you to accomplish what he has for you. And those three things are power, love, and self-discipline. Those are all in verse 7 as well. Power, love, and self-discipline. Power here, I believe, means gifts, attributes, competencies, capacity that God has given to Timothy. Paul's not generating a list and saying, here, you want to work to develop these things. He's saying, no, these are already within you. And then he says, love. And you know, biblically, love is not the feeling, the emotion, but it's a self-giving, it's a self-emptying. And it's imperative that this power and love exist side by side. Because in the absence of that kind of love, power gets skewed. I mean, we see it every day, right? And I would say Paul is also speaking shorthand here for something that he's said a lot more about in one of his other letters. He's got an entire chapter where he talks about power. And in fact, if you substitute gifts for power, you'll know what I'm talking about maybe. And then he's got another chapter immediately following where he talks about love. And he says, if you can have all the power, all the gifts in the world, but if you don't have love, you don't really have much. You know, I'm talking about 1 Corinthians chapters 12 and 13. Timothy would be aware of that. So he's saying that in shorthand. And then the third thing that he says God has already given to you, Timothy, is self-discipline. Now we hear self-discipline and we think, that sounds kind of like an oxymoron. But if we think of it as being God at work within us when no one else is around, maybe what we call, Henry, you don't need to be self-disciplined. We'll just take care of you for now. But it's that force within us that would keep our impulses in check so that the things that are good and life-giving do happen and the things that are destructive of life don't. I mean, Timothy's no different than any of the rest of us. We have impulses, not all of which are helpful, and it's self-discipline that helps corral that. So this is, did you notice, Paul's not saying, Timothy, here are the three things that you need to do. He's not even talking specifically about a situation. He's saying more generally, Timothy, God has given you all these things that you need. Draw from them. Let me be a force of encouragement in your life. I can't wait to come and help rekindle that fire that's within you. So how does this work for us? How does mentoring happen in our lives? I know we're focusing more on the role of being mentors today, but if we haven't seen it before, it's helpful to know what it looks like. And so I'm going to get personal here for a moment and talk about a significant mentor in my life, and in particular, a mentor not in my life as a mentor to other church members or neighbors or kids I coach or any of that, but as a mentor to other pastors. I just want to kind of narrow the circle. And this is meaningful because, I'm going to let you in on a little secret. Pastors as a group are not, on the whole, very open to reaching out and asking for and accepting help from others. Now, you might think, well, that sounds kind of harsh, Pastor. This is just my observation and experience over a lot of years. It's not universally true, but as a category, we don't do very well there. And I think the reason is because we're trained to be the experts. We go to school, you know, an ivory tower, and you set apart, and you're going to spend 3 or 4 years having knowledge poured in, and the teachers say, you are going to be so knowledgeable, and you're the expert, and you're the shepherd, and you've got a flock. And none of that really aligns with reaching out and saying, hey, I'm over my head. I don't know what I'm doing. Can you help me? I had mentoring modeled for me by Fred Aigner, my first senior colleague. And he remains a close friend and a mentor. And he did it. He's one of the most competent leaders I've ever been around. But that's not the mentoring that I'm talking about here. He modeled reaching out and asking when he didn't know. And even someone who leads at a high level is going to run into something that he or she doesn't know. So he was very free in talking about it. We're doing this, and I thought, hey, this guy's done it before. I'll reach out and talk to him. And here's what I learned when I called so-and-so. And I came to him one time. I had a really gnarly pastoral care situation. It was way beyond my capacity, but it was in front of me. And he said, you know, I could tell you what I would do there. But what I would really do is call this guy. And I think you'd enjoy him. And rather than get in the way, you know, let's just see how that goes. And I called this guy. And he opened up possibilities that I never would have seen otherwise. So I share this with you because that has shaped me as a mentor in the lives of other pastors. And, you know, I said not everyone's open, not every pastor is open and willing to receive. This is true of humanity, right? I mean, you know. And so you can't be a mentor to someone who doesn't want it. You just can't. It might be someone else's to do, or it might be yours in another season. But if someone's not open to it, then there's not much you can do. But I'm saying now about people who are in my life, who are open to it. My temptation is to want to say, here's the answer. Do this. And so these words of Paul to Timothy of calling forth within him, it takes longer, but it's more effective. Right? If you're the answer person in someone's life, then what happens when you're not around? So you really want to build within them or draw forth within them what's already there. Another reason why I want to encourage you to serve as a mentor. And by the way, here are the two reasons why you might be thinking this isn't for me. One is you think, I don't have the ability. I don't have the ability. Look, if you are one day ahead of somebody on something that matters to them, you have the ability. And you may be the one that's in their life that they can hear it from. You also might be thinking, you know, I do have the ability. I got all kinds of ability. But I don't want to take the time. It's going to take too much. Well, you don't know. You may just be in a moment or in a season. And do you really want to be the reason why someone doesn't get what only you can provide? So here's an example, a recent one for me. And this is not in a mentoring relationship, but I think the dynamic happens in mentoring relationships as well. So that's why I want to share it with you. This is more of a friend relationship. We're peer-to-peer, eye-to-eye, and we're feeding into each other's lives all the time. So, not long ago, I had time in the car, and it was just someone I hadn't talked with for a while, and I thought, I'm going to call and just see. And lo and behold, he picked up. And he was also in the car, and so we had time to talk, and hadn't for a while, and we covered all kinds of ground. And somewhere about halfway into a long conversation, he got quiet. And he said, "Don, I got to tell you, you're an answer to prayer right now." And I mean, people don't usually say that to me, so he had my attention. Usually it's, "Quit bothering me." So what had happened was that morning he had reached out because he was kind of at an impasse and something that mattered. And he said, 20 minutes later, you call. 20 minutes later, you call, and here's where we are. So I share this with you because there are people in your life for whom you can be their answer to prayer. Now, I didn't wake up in the morning and say, "You know, I haven't talked to so-and-so for a while. I wonder how I might be an answer to his prayer." No, it doesn't work like that. But if you're open to being used by God in this way, who knows what's possible? So my hope and prayer for all of us is, as we work through this 6-week series on love, that we might each say, in turn and in our own way, "I am a mentor." Whether or not I can dunk a basketball, and I can't, whether or not I can dunk a basketball, I can encourage and I can call forth what God has already put into people. Power, love, and self-discipline. Amen.